Before I get started this week, I wanted to give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and TMS coach based in Los Angeles. She was a burnt out high school teacher who battled TMS symptoms for years before healing herself completely and leaving her dead end job. Simply put, she gets it, especially the frustration of doing all the right things, implementing the tools, and still not getting the results that you deserve. If this is you, I encourage you to book a free introductory call to learn about her tailored one-on-one coaching program. During this time, she will identify the specific barriers that are getting in the way of you fully healing, unraveling blocks such as subconscious or negative beliefs, fearful thought patterns, or unfelt emotions is crucial for living a pain-free life again. Don't settle for that partial healing. Bet on yourself again by going to jeanniecolwin.com. That's JeannieKulwin.com to book your free call today. And also check out that impressive testimonials page to see her clients' transformations firsthand. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. I'm back from Disney World. And as I record this, this is the first show since probably September or October where I've been able to record with the garage door open. So hopefully the street sweeper already came. So that's already been very loud. And the neighborhood kids will be home in another 10 minutes or so. So I have to get this open done before things start getting wild and crazy out there. And as I record this, it is the opening day of spring soccer season, which means I get to get back out on the pitch with my girls, my U10 soccer team. And we've got a handful of new kids coming on, and I'm very excited to meet them and see all the things that this beautiful game can teach us, not only as athletes, but as people. So very excited to do that. Today, friends of the show, Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni and Alec Kasson have joined forces. You've heard them as a sponsor the last few weeks on the show, but with Pain-Free Comeback. Painfreecomeback.com is where you can check it out. But they come on and they talk about abbreviated versions of their story and kind of how they got here and this program and why they developed it and who it's really targeted for. And it's just a really great interview and story. So let's listen to the two of them and I. We did this just a few hours ago, so we're fresh off of it. A lot of times when I record interviews, it's done weeks in advance, and I'm trying to rack my brain, remember the things that I talked about 5 weeks ago with somebody. But this one was just done about 6 hours ago. So it was a blast having them on, and from all different parts of the world. I'm in Seattle. Alec is in California, but then Miriam is in Malta, which is it's south of Italy. And so I think it's in between Sicily and Northern Africa. So she's on the other side, and the time zones and all that kind of stuff. But it was a wonderful interview, and I love talking to them both, and I'm very appreciative of their partnership. So without further ado, here is Alec, Miriam, and myself. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. With me are a couple of returning guests, and actually one of them asked me, how often do you do an episode where you have two guests on at the same time? And I said, I think maybe once a year, but we're gonna do the best we can. We're almost a perfect triangle across the world in terms of how we're doing this, which is really nice. But I have Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni, who's been on the show. Last time she was here was November of 21. And then Alec Kasson from California, who was on a little over a year ago. Are you both there? Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for being here.
Good to be here, Eddie.
So as I said, like, you've both been on. We've heard your story. However, there are a lot of new listeners in the last 3 years. And there's definitely new listeners within the last year. So I want to get some background and then kind of roll into a project that the two of you are working on. We're going to talk about research around chronic pain in athletes. That's going to be a big focus on this. When I started this podcast, I mean, the term the Mind and Fitness Podcast is that this was meant to be 50% mind, 50% fitness athletes. And then it sort of became 90% mind and very little with athletes. So I'm so happy that the two of you created what you created, and we'll get more into that in a few minutes. Does that sound fair?
Perfect.
Yes.
Awesome. Miriam, tell us about you. You know, the stuff I'm curious about is, what is your sport initially? And then I want to get into what happened. Did you have to quit your sport and that kind of thing? But let's start with what's your sport and what's kind of the things that you enjoy doing physically?
Yes. So my sport, my number one sport, is definitely rock climbing. I practice it outside on the cliffs and inside caves. So I've been doing it for about 12 years now. But around 8 years ago, I had to stop because I had chronic shoulder pain. So I'm going to keep my story rather short, rather short and sweet.
Yeah.
But basically, I was climbing pretty hard. I was going also through a tough time emotionally, although I didn't quite know that at the time. And it started with what seemed like a shoulder injury. And I just got like pain in my right shoulder as I was climbing. I thought nothing of it. The next day it felt okay-ish, but the pain nagged on, basically. I went in to see a physical therapist. At first, I was really excited about physical therapy. I thought it would help me. I liked the therapist. But eventually, you know, I started to notice that it wasn't improving and that was frustrating me. I was getting a bit obsessed about it. And eventually things turned a little bit sour. The therapist kind of gave up on me. I was chasing doctors, chasing other solutions. Eventually I got an MRI and they did find something called a Hagel lesion.
Oh, I think you and I talked about this weird, obscure injury. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that brings me back. Okay, continue.
Which is basically like when a part of the ligament is torn off the humerus, which sounded serious, and they told me I needed surgery for that. So I thought I had found the cause, well and good. I had to go through surgery and that's it. But when I talked to my surgeon or the guy who was going to be my surgeon, he said like, you know, I can fix it, but I can't guarantee that your pain will go away. And I was really not happy to hear that because I was like, you know, I mean, I'm going to do the surgery for my pain to go away and I can get back to rock climbing. But he noticed this based on the examination he did of me, based on how my pain was manifesting. He already picked up on something, that something else was off. So that got me confused, very discouraged. And a week before the surgery, I woke up with intense leg pain, pain down my left leg. Then it spread to my right. Then it spread to my piriformis, to my thighs. Was like a combination of sciatica pain, piriformis syndrome, calf pain. I could even see visible spasms in one of my legs. So it was visibly spasmating. I blamed it on a short cycle ride I had done, but it didn't make sense.
Yeah.
And that pain actually stopped me from pursuing the surgery. I thought like, hey, I can't go in for the surgery when I have this like really, really debilitating pain in my legs, which is way stronger than the shoulder pain.
Yeah.
So I canceled. I realized there were a lot of fears surrounding the surgery as well. But things kept getting worse on the whole. I started also to develop nerve pain in both my hands and arms. One of the doctors suggested it might be fibromyalgia developing. So, I was pretty discouraged and depressed until a desperate Google search got me to TMS. I discovered the TMS wiki at the time. It was back in 2016. I joined the forum. I started reading and things started to make sense. And I thought like, you know, I'm going to give this a try because nothing else has worked. And this is the only thing that sounds different and is kind of resonating with me. And to cut a long story short, in around 6 weeks, I got back to rock climbing. I started with a really easy climb, even though my physical therapist back then had told me like, you know, beware of overhangs, do only like really slabby, mild climbs. He cautioned me against this. But by that time I thought like, if my symptoms are neuroplastic, if they're TMS, and then my body is fine. And I think that was the most empowering thing that I learned, that my body can be fine. My body is fine. And I have a certain amount of control over my symptoms. I stopped fearing my symptoms.
Yeah.
And of course, it sounds like really, you know, fast that I healed in 6 weeks, those initial symptoms. But I realized now in retrospect that I was doing the right things and the situation was ideal for the healing. I had stopped working because of my pain. It was summer. I was able to spend a lot of time out by the sea. So I had like the right conditions for healing. You know, I had space. I could focus. And I really, I learned how to gradually resume activity. I kind of listened to my intuition. I resumed activity bit by bit. You know, I didn't rush, but I did it consistently. So yeah, now in retrospect, I kind of know what I did right. And
awesome.
That's my story, basically.
Awesome. Alec, what about you? Tell us about yours.
Yeah. Well, before I get into mine, I wanted to share something about Miriam's story that she omitted that I always love. So she tells the story of one of the doctors that she was seeing, like, running out of the clinic after her, saying, like, you shouldn't ever rock climb
again.
Yes. And I had a moment the other night. We're putting together this presentation, and Miriam sent over a few photos of her rock climbing. And there's this one that we put in of her just having a one-arm hang on this shoulder,
wow,
like full body weight and everything. And it was just like this beautiful moment of, you know, representing a full pain-free comeback.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't want to get into like the nitty-gritty of it. Yeah, one of the doctors really like nocebo'd me. Basically, he told me something that really scared me. And after that, my neuropathic pain was way worse, yeah, after I heard his warning. So that really affected me. And only by learning about mind-body syndrome, I realized how suggestible we are as human beings and how we should really be careful what kind of warnings, what kind of information we take in about our bodies and their abilities, because it can be a huge stumbling block.
So that, sorry, Alec, to cut you off. This just came to my mind based on what you just said, Miriam. The nocebo thing is incredibly powerful. And there's two examples of this, because I don't know what the exact inverse of a nocebo would be, but I remember being, when I first found CrossFit and I was really, really into it. And I had like a, I don't know if it's an overuse injury or whatever, but just going too hard, too fast or whatever. And I was hurting. And my CrossFit coach at the time had said, I think you have compartment syndrome. And I don't know if you guys know what that is or if you've ever Googled it, but it's awful.
Oh,
it's like,
new one to me.
Yeah, it's like muscle wasting, like muscle disease. I mean, it's bad. And I felt so much worse like after that, like physically felt so much worse. And then the opposite of that was, I remember, my shoulder pain, my haggle, when I was diagnosed with a haggle lesion, I felt terrible when I got that MRI diagnosis. And then when I met with the doctor who diagnosed me with that, which turned out to not be the case, but she was wonderful. And I'd love to actually have a follow-up conversation with her, but, she had said that you're not going to hurt it any worse. And so all these things that you've prevented yourself from doing, like, we can have the surgery, but in the interim, you know, work up to tolerance. Like, you can do all these other things. You're not going to hurt it any worse. And the amount of better I felt just by hearing that was so interesting. So these, like, completely, literally all it was words, and yet my symptoms felt completely different. And that sounds a lot like what you're talking about with the nocebo.
Yes, so words are crucial, and what we take in.
I need to come up with a term for the opposite of note. Maybe it's a procebo.
Well,
maybe it's
close. Placebo effect, essentially, right?
Like, I guess that's quite the definition of a placebo. But I think procebo sounds pretty dope. I think that's.
I like procebo too.
Yeah.
Right. I have an athletic bent to that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Alec, give us your story.
Yeah. So, you know, like Miriam, my story is about a sport that I loved, and, you know, having the feeling that it was taken away from me, and mine was cycling. So back in 2011, I was 18 years old, and I was racing semi-pro at the time. I held a professional mountain bike license, and I was a Cat 2 road racer, for those who are in the sport in the US. And my life was structured around cycling. I was going to college, but my main focus was riding. And I was pretty obsessed, not just about riding, but about my diet, about stretching, about, you know, taking care of my bike. And I had signed up for two of the biggest races that I had ever done. And they were about 2 weeks away. One of them was one Lance Armstrong had won 2 years prior. And I'm out on this training ride, this easy training ride, kind of recovering. And I'm out of the saddle. And all of a sudden, I just feel this lightning bolt of pain in my lower back. It was like somebody was twisting my spine from end to end. And it was so bad that I couldn't just flex my back at all. I had to essentially stand up straight and pedal home. It was excruciating. I got back home. I iced my back. I saw a chiropractor, and the chiropractor said, don't worry, 2 weeks, you're going to be back on top. Well, 2 weeks go by. I'm still in immense pain. Then 4, 6, 8. Pretty soon, my whole season goes down the drain. And not only am I in constant pain and not able to ride my bike, but I'm unable to sit in a chair. I'm unable to do just normal physical activities like driving without pain. And I ended up having to go, I went back to college and I suffered through a semester of just terrible, terrible pain. And in the meantime, I was doing all these physical things to try to get better and was diagnosed with a, finally about 5 months later, with a ruptured L4, L5 spinal disc and a torn L5 S1. And that's, the doctors after that, they led to, well, okay, we could do some epidural injections and tried a series of those. And they provided relief for, you know, a couple days. Talk about placebo effect, right? And then the pain came back worse than ever. And I made a decision that I was going to have to withdraw from college. And I spent the next 3 months partially bedbound. I was on opioids, extremely restricted physical activity, was depressed, had suicidal thoughts, and was unclear whether or not I was ever going to not just, you know, get back to cycling, but even just be pain-free and live a normal life again.
The lightning bolt that you talk about, was there anything that happened in that moment that made sense looking back now? Meaning like, or maybe not looking back right now, but had you just done something incredibly strenuous? Had something, had a rock hit you in the back? Had a car hit you? Yeah. Like anything like that, where logically it's like, yeah, something in that moment acute would have caused this structural injury.
Yeah. That's the funny thing, Eddie. I was on a recovery ride, so I was going at an easier pace. And I was just out of the saddle. I wasn't pushing myself hard. There was no crash, no rock, no car, no nothing physical that would have happened. But if I look back, and I remember we discussed this on the episode that we recorded together 14 months ago, the fact that I was going to be doing two races where, quite honestly, I was going to be out of my depth. And my whole identity was wrapped around cycling to the point where if I failed, it was going to be a threat, not just to, you know, the physically, but also to my ego.
Yeah.
And so the big threat wasn't any physical thing, but it was really this emotional threat that caused the pain.
And then, how did you get to a point of learning that, hey, I think this will be an important thing that we'll come back to, that yes, you may have these issues, rupture L4, L5, torn L5 S1, those may be true. And I think we're going to probably talk about this in the research portion of this, but that doesn't like, that's the gray hair of the spine to take one of Sarno's terms. It's not necessarily the cause of the pain.
Yeah. So for me, it started with curiosity. There would be days where I would do everything that the doctor said, ice your back, don't do too much physical activity, but do these physical activities. You know, manage your energy. And I could have more pain on those days compared to the days when I would be doing all the stuff they said not to do. And I started to wonder, like, why would that be the case, right? If I was following everything to the T, why would my symptoms fluctuate like this? And it wasn't until my mom actually gave me a copy of Healing Back Pain by Dr. Sarno that I read it and I started to see myself on every page. And I knew that there was a mental or emotional component to the pain. I started to kind of get that before I read the book, but it wasn't until I read it and Sarno codified everything that made so much sense. And I started to see, you know, my low self-esteem, people pleasing, catastrophizing thoughts, all these things that made me predisposed to essentially having neuroplastic pain.
Yeah.
And within, you know, within a few weeks of employing his technique, watching his lectures, all of my pain in my low back shifted to my upper back. And I was like, right, I have it on the run. This is perfect.
Yeah.
And within a number of weeks as well, that pain started to go away. And then I started to develop some other weird things like shin splints when I was running, even though I wasn't running far. I developed weakness in my arm and in my thighs. And it was basically my mind, my body saying, until you address some of these deeper personality traits, some of these deeper kind of threat behaviors, you're going to continue to have symptoms. Because I was kind of just pushing through it because I knew that it was neuroplastic.
Sure.
So, but, you know, I started to see a TMS therapist in the Bay Area, and eventually got to a point where all of those faded away and became unrestricted when it comes to physical activity.
There's something interesting about what you said there, Alec. You said when your pain moved from your back up to your shoulder area or your upper back area, you said like, oh, that's great, which is actually the correct like attitude and response to have, because I see so many people in my work who get another symptom and they feel so upset at the new symptom and so scared all over again at the new symptom that that blocks them from progressing. But the fact that you said like, oh yeah, that's great, that's proof that this is TMS and that I can work on it, that probably really, really helped you.
Hugely. And it was something that Sarno had said. It's like, you know, when the pain is starting to go away, it might shift to a different location. And when that happened, I was actually just really excited.
Yeah, actually me too. I also had this, like one day I woke up and I couldn't turn my wrist. It was like ridiculous. And I just like, you know, burst out laughing. And one day it was my heel. Again, I did nothing. So for me as well, these were like proof that, this is just TMS. But I'm just pointing it out because there are some people, especially those who suffer from health anxiety, who wouldn't respond in that way, who would panic all over again and get upset all over again. And that unfortunately doesn't help with the healing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Talk about, because there's something here. The two of you are athletes and they're divergent sports, but they are highly physical sports and highly physically demanding sports. I mean, the level of bike riding that you're talking about or cycling, Alec, is different than anything that I can imagine, but I do ride bikes with my kids. and Miriam, to be honest, I can maybe climb the rock wall at my kid's school, but that might be about it. I'm sure I could do fine. In fact, maybe that's something I should go check out. There are a lot of rock climbing and bouldering clubs around my our part of the world. Pacific Northwest is very rich in that kind of stuff. But you guys are talking about being fairly intense athletes with a lot of demands on your body. What is it about, and this is the research part, what is it about athletes that makes you susceptible to? I had a Instagram message hidden in my like request DMs just a couple of days ago from this guy. He's competed in the CrossFit Games, and he talked about having these chronic health problems, and he couldn't believe that there was a that TMS even existed, but that too, there was somebody that was talking about it from an athletic perspective. And I thought, oh, that's so funny because I'm about to interview these people about this particular thing. What is it about athletes? Talk about that.
Yeah. So I think based on my personal experience, being a high level athlete and just the athletes that we've worked with, it's clear that athletes have a unique disposition to chronic pain. That's for a few reasons. One, there's a hugely physical nature to the sports that we do, right? And based on the conditioning that we have around us, you know, we're told that if we have pain in a certain area, then there must be something wrong with that area of our body, right? And it is easier than ever to figure out, you know, have some sort of idea of what's wrong in the body, right? Not just from conventional medicine, but all these other tests and things that we can do. And so there's a physical component where it's like, well, this makes sense. I, you know, went out running for 10 miles, so it makes sense that I have lesions on my knees or that my ankles look terrible. There's also the mental component, though, because I find that a lot of athletes, including myself, you know, we get a lot of joy from doing our sports, right? And also that joy can be a double-edged sword, right? Sometimes it's, you know, this competitive nature and we wrap our identities up around in our performance, whether that is, you know, racing competitively or doing things competitively, or even just, you know, in a co-ed softball game, right? And so I think the combination of the physical pressure and the conditioning and the mental pressure is what makes athletes uniquely susceptible to chronic pain and staying in pain.
Do you think that, I imagine the answer is yes, but if you have any other color to add to this, when I think of, I think it's inherently a gift. It's probably also a curse that athletes are much more in tune with their bodies. And that seems like if you were to tell somebody, hey, you seem really in tune with your body, that that's a great asset to have. You probably know, like Miriam, you probably know the anatomy of the shoulder better than any, just if I went outside to my cul-de-sac and I interviewed the people that live in the 8 houses that are there, nobody could tell me what a haggle is. Nobody could tell me the different elements of the shoulder. You probably can, probably before you learned about TMS or anything like that. So is it a gift? Is it a curse? Talk a little bit about athletes being so in tune with their bodies.
Actually, also, this comes to mind now, because when you're an athlete, you're very familiar with the term like sports injury and what kind of sports injuries are common for your sport. So I get a lot of my friends actually telling me, oh, you know, if you do this exercise wrong, you're going to get elbow tendonitis or going to. So they're aware of it. You know, maybe they might have had it at some point, but like being into the sport and also following other athletes who might have these conditions, you know, it's programming, as Alex said, you're kind of expecting it to happen, you know? So even with wear and tear, it's a common belief among a lot of athletes that wear and tear causes pain, when we know from the research that it doesn't. So yeah, definitely. And as you say, also like being in tune with your body, you know, being a little bit hypervigilant even of how you're using your body, you know, if there's a little bit of a strain, you might get a little bit concerned that it means something more than just a strain.
Yep.
So all of these things play in. If there's competition, if there's something you're looking forward to, you're starting to fear that your pain is going to prevent you from enjoying it. So all of these things, I think, you know, play in when it comes to athletes.
Yeah. And just to add to that as well, I think we take cues from the professional ranks too, right? Mm-hmm. So if you see, for example, in baseball, pitchers being... having back surgery because they have a herniated disc, right? We're taught to be really sensitive to what's going on in our bodies, which can be a good thing. But the way in which we pay attention matters. And so if you have, athletes who are getting back surgery or shoulder surgery, it kind of normalizes the fact that, well, oh, if they're doing it, then, you know, this is something that I need as well. Not necessarily told that, hey, you know, 2/3 of people in the general population have a herniated disc.
Yep. That example reminds me of Ken Griffey Jr. is the greatest baseball player of all time. I'm not going to hear nobody else can tell me anything different.
What city this guy's from?
What's that?
I was going to say, wonder what city Eddie's from.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, I'm from originally Northern California, so I actually grew up a Barry Bonds fan, and he's in my top 5, regardless of any, of any. The thing is, even when he weighed 140 pounds, he was still hitting 370 and 40 home runs a year. So, like, it, you know, steroids be not, whatever. But Ken Griffey Jr. is the greatest baseball player of all time in my mind. When he broke his wrist crashing into the wall, making a spectacular catch in 1995, and the amount of kids that suddenly had wrist injuries as the next season ramped up was incredible. So I think even like we talk about this collective conscious idea where, you know, you have this awareness around injuries that happen to the people that are in your sport. That happens at a very young age. You know, you, like you had said, you look up at the professional ranks and you see what happens to these people. And I can think of examples all the way up and down the list, even just entertainment or sports that we like. Like I don't play football at all, but if I watch enough football and the same injury continues to reoccur, I might start to feel like I have a nagging injury in that spot. Like that's kind of how powerful suggestion is. So that's one thing I'm thinking of, that even 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids can see Ken Griffey Jr. crash into a wall, break his wrist, be out for the majority of the season as the greatest baseball player on the planet. And then suddenly all these young kids have these wrist injuries. And what is that? So, and that was 30 years ago. which is crazy. So that definitely exists. And people that are listening to this right now, just think around to instances of athletes that have, in whether it's in your sport or in other sports, you can see it on the peripheral that these injuries start to pop up, these stories, and these are things that you can internalize and often do internalize, and it becomes really challenging as an athlete to try and decipher what's real and what's not, like what's causing my pain and what's probably not.
Yeah.
What bothers me also, Eddie, is that we're quick to call them injuries. They were quick to call them wrist injuries.
Yep.
Whereas they're not really injuries, yep. Right? If it's EMS.
Yep.
And also, like, yeah, we assume that if we feel a little bit of pain, then we're injured.
Yep.
That's, you know, not necessarily the assumption. So it's, I think, very important once you learn about this work to learn how to distinguish between a real injury, an acute injury, and a mind-body issue, which is coming simply from a buildup of tension in the area.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. One quick thing to add on that point too is I don't think you see this in every single community, right? It's not just athletes. It's not just amateur athletes or pro athletes. There's all sorts of examples of communities with psychosomatic illnesses, and won't go down the rabbit hole of all the research there. But I wonder, like, even just right now, Eddie, like, you're a baseball fan. You've probably seen the rash of injuries to pitchers,
Tommy
especially
John's,
in the past
yep.
few weeks.
Yeah, that UCL.
Right? And I have no evidence to support this, but I wonder how much of, you know, if you were to take imaging of some of these pitchers before they had any pain or any symptoms whatsoever, how many of them would still have these abnormalities that doctors are, once they are in pain, saying, this is a problem, you need surgery or you need rehab?
I had that thought, actually, not about the UCL specifically, because I do think that's going to be a really hot topic over the next few months in Major League Baseball. But I was thinking about, you had a post on LinkedIn in the last couple of weeks, and I had made a comment about my heel and about how these statistics are easy to find. I could probably Google heel bone spur right now, and I think the number is like, if there could be 100 people that have the exact same bone spur at the exact same spot in their foot, but 95% of people will never have a symptom. And so, like, what's the difference in that? And I had thought, like, maybe just for, it's so annoying to go and get imaging that I don't know if I'm even going to go do this experiment, but it would be interesting to go and get a, just an x-ray, because that could show a spur. Go get an x-ray in my left foot, which is the one that has had the issue, and then also go get it in the right foot and just ask the doctor, can I see these at the exact same time? Because I would bet if we're saying that only about 5% of people with a bone spur have pain, I'm going to make a uneducated guess that majority of adults, especially active adults, probably have bone spurs in their feet. I think that has to be a certainty. If there's only 5% that have pain, think about the number of people that have foot pain that we talk to or interact with. It's a much larger number than that 5%. I just feel like that would be an interesting experiment. But I digress.
Well, I can share a little bit about the experiment that I did, because it might be relevant and interesting here, where I had this ruptured spinal disc that was on my MRI in 2011. And I was living in the UK, where medical care is a little less expensive. And, you know, fast forward 13 years, I was wondering, hey, I don't have any chronic back pain. I wonder if I still have this ruptured spinal disc. And so I get an MRI, and it was perfect. It was the report from the radiologist was identical to the last report, L4, L5, ruptured spinal disc, no changes. And I was like, if this does not prove that structural abnormalities can be harmless, nothing will.
Yep.
Because in 2011, I had immense pain with a ruptured spinal disc. 2024, no pain whatsoever, same ruptured spinal disc. I'm sure if we were to take imaging of Miriam's shoulder as well, we would see some of a similar storyline.
Oh, yes. I was told that there was no way to get that, like, looking the same again besides surgery. So,
Miriam,
sure.
How, if you don't mind my asking, how, Alec already revealed his age when he talked about when he was in college. Miriam, how old are you, if you don't mind my asking?
I'm now 36.
Okay. So interesting, when I had my shoulder surgery in 2016, the PA, the physician assistant, told me, because one of the findings in the surgery was that I had a torn supraspinatus in my shoulder, and my rotator cuff was torn also, which was not the original thing that I went in for surgery for. And I was like, oh, well, that's really weird, because, like, you know, I didn't really have the symptoms that would suggest that there was a rotator cuff tear. It was more of like a labrum issue were the symptoms that I had. And he had said that pretty much anybody over the age of 40, like more than the majority, have torn rotator cuffs. And I was like, huh, yeah, that's interesting. And he was saying just general population, not athletes or people that put demands on their shoulders, like in rock climbing. So yes, I would bet, Miriam, if we could go slide you in an MRI machine, you probably have significant shoulder damage on both sides, even if you don't feel anything.
I don't want to know. There's no pain. And I don't want to be placeboed again. Yeah. So
you make a good point there, Eddie, though, because there's all these studies that are out there around just the layperson and structural abnormalities like herniated discs and rotator cuffs.
Yep.
When we were creating our program, we were asking the question, okay, what is the science around high level elite athletes and these abnormalities and whether or not they cause pain? So just a few really interesting examples. 40% of elite athletes who are using a dominant shoulder, say, you know, like in javelin, for example, 40% have a partial or full tear of their rotator cuff, no pain. And they did a follow-up study with all the athletes 5 years later. None had any evaluation or treatment for shoulder issue. NBA players, when they looked at scans of their knees, 50% had lesions, no pain. Two-thirds of collegiate and pro hockey players with degenerative changes in their hips, once again, no pain. And then when it comes to rock climbers, 80% had some sort of shoulder abnormality and no pain whatsoever. So it's not just for, you know, the layperson who's going out like the weekend warrior, but also people who are using their bodies day after day after day in a repetitive way have these abnormalities and yet don't have any pain and are still able to perform at an elite level.
Yeah, that's crazy. It doesn't surprise me at all, but it's kind of wild statistically to hear that. Talk about, so as we're kind of wrapping up into the last few minutes here, you've made mention of this program. When I first saw the original post about it, I had said, hey, like when this podcast started, the thought for me was, God, I would love to do a program that's designed for athletes that is from a TMS angle, has some video components, all this kind of stuff. I even bought a really nice green screen in 2020 to do this. And then you guys did it. So I think that this is one of the, there's so many TMS coaches and programs and stuff out there, but there is not much out there for athletes. And that's a lot of the inquiries that I get. I mentioned the CrossFit athlete that private messaged me on Instagram a couple of days ago about this, and there's just not much out there for athletes. And I would say that they are among the most, if not the most, susceptible people to having a chronic issue of some kind. Because TMS is all about a diversion and grabbing your attention. And if you're an athlete, whether you're elite or just recreational, if you can't do your sport and that's the thing that you enjoy the most, it has your attention. Talk about the program. What is it called? Where do people get it? And what's different about it? Give me some of the deets.
Yeah. So the program is called Pain-Free Comeback, and it was born initially. I had the idea that I was seeing so many clients who were into physical activity. So that was their main aim, to resume physical activity. And also, I was also noticing that a lot of people were progressing, but were plateauing as well. So when I asked them whether they had resumed their sport or their favorite activities, they would say like, oh no, not that, I can't do that.
Yeah.
So I noticed even among people who have improved that there tends to be this stage that they're at sometimes when they haven't resumed everything. They're still living in fear somehow. So by that time, I also got to know Alec. I got to know that he used to be an ex-semi-pro cyclist. And I thought it would be a great idea to partner up with Alec on a special program, especially for athletes. And also Alec liked the idea. And that's how Pain-Free Comeback was born, really.
Yeah, I still remember the moment when she asked, like, do you want to create something for athletes? And it was just like this full body yes. Like, yeah. Heck yeah, this is center of my bullseye. So
what's the format of it? Talk a little bit, because a lot of the programs that we see are more like one of the ones that when people message me and say, hey, how do I get started with any of this stuff? Mm-hmm. A lot of times I'll send them to Alan Gordon's free program on the TMS Wiki, not just because it's a mm-hmm. low barrier of entry, but because there's media involved. And I just feel like for a lot of people, particularly us, like, you know, millennials, or I don't know if you're even the next, whatever, Gen Z or Gen Y, or like whatever the next category is, Alec. But I feel like for a lot of us, like the media medium is much more effective. Yeah. Talk about how the program is structured.
Yeah. Still a millennial, just at the tail end,
awesome.
I will say.
Okay. I found out last night, by the way, that my wife is actually the term is exennial, which apparently stopped. It went from 79 to 84, and my wife was born in 83. So I thought her and I were both millennials, but no, she is an exennial because she's a few years older than me.
Very interesting. Yeah. Hadn't heard of that one.
Well, sorry, I digress again. I continue.
Format of the, well, the format of the program you were talking about, we found the same thing, right? There are some people who respond really well to, you know, reading a book like Dr. Sarno's book. Other people, they want a video. Other people like audio. Other people like some live interaction. And so what we wanted to do is create a program that would be suitable for, you know, somebody who is a semi-pro or pro athlete, or somebody who's just a, you know, maybe in the later stages of life and feeling restricted because of chronic pain and they want to get back to their favorite activity. So we created a series of 11 different lessons. There's three different pillars to the program. And each lesson contains a video that Miriam and I both shoot. There are audio exercises as well that we've recorded to apply. And we also have a workbook, and this workbook has basically the all of the activities, all of the exercises that we have used, that we've helped clients use to help them make incredible breakthroughs through their pain. So there's a mix of different formats in the program. And we also have a component where, you know, some people need some extra additional support. So we're building this pain-free comeback community as well on the platform where, you know, you can ask questions to us, we'll answer, you can share your wins, share what's going well, what's not, et cetera. And so there's kind of this dynamic nature to the program. That's our vision for it.
Yeah. And if I can add something to that, so we start with education because we believe that people need to know the truth, how chronic pain develops, what are the most common triggers, getting people to identify their own personal triggers, right, that led to chronic pain. But then there's also the application component where they get to implement this new knowledge. And this gets implemented through changes in mindset, changes in habits and even behaviors, changes in the way they move. So we guide people through this process until in the end, they will be, you know, seeing a transformation. So the last pillar is in fact about transformation, you know, creating the right conditions, the right emotional conditions for healing, really. Letting go of that resistance, for example, of that urge to fix yourself, of that mentality to constantly micromanage your symptoms, and instead easing into physical activity from a position of safety. So we try to present this stuff in a sequence that makes sense, right? Starting from education and then starting with some tasks which get people to implement some of the new knowledge and habits, right? So it's like one thing builds up on another. Like,
and just to piggyback off of that, I think what's unique about athletes is that all of the techniques that you can learn to become pain-free are also applicable to optimal athletic performance. So we put a bonus lesson in at the end of basically using all these skills, using all this wisdom that you've learned about your body, about how to essentially empower yourself and apply it to the sport that you love to be at your best. And so that, I think, is the benefit that athletes have here too. It's not just, hey, can I become pain-free and get back to physical activity? But there is a possibility to learn that your body really is Herculean. It is built that way. And this will help you in whatever sport or physical activity you're into.
What's the what's the length or like design or idea? Is it I do a little bit every day? Is it I sit down and hammer it all out in one spot? Like, what's the what's kind of the flow or the ideal time frame for people?
Ideally, a little bit every day, you know, taking reasonable breaks, of course, over the course of, I would say, around 6 weeks. I mean, it's flexible. We don't get people to complete it within 6 weeks. It's not a must. But ideally, to keep a consistent pace, you know, learning something each day and then reflecting on how that new knowledge applies to you personally. We really encourage this, you know, after every lesson, they have to reflect on how whatever they learned might apply to their situation. Because it's their life, it's their situation that they are working on.
Yep.
So a lot of the work will be kind of unofficial. It will take place as they go about their day-to-day life, not while they're doing, while they're sitting and reading and watching the videos. So there has to be time for that, for the digestion of information and the like informal application of the new habits that we teach. It's very important.
That consistency, I would agree with. And to put kind of a concrete number on it too, you know, 20 to 30 minutes a day. And it's not necessarily engaging, watching the videos in the program, but like Miriam said, doing the exercises, seeing how it applies to your daily life and building momentum.
I'll say I work in tech as a day job for my living. And the website is beautiful. You guys did a great job with it. And it's painfreecomeback.com. Is that right?
Yes.
Painfreecomeback.com. We have an amazing website designer as well, Isabel. If anybody is looking to build their website, they can reach out to us directly. Hello@painfreecomeback.com. Awesome. Giving her a shout out there.
Awesome. This is great. Anything else that we didn't touch on? I had everything on my agenda. Anything else in particular?
I would say, like, for those people who are like making progress, but they feel that they're so far away from, you know, resuming their activities full on as they used to, you know, not to rule out the idea that this is possible, because I see a lot of people who kind of think it's impossible now, like, okay, they can make improvement, they can manage their symptoms, but no, that's too much. Resuming rock climbing, resuming marathon training is too much. And it's not, it's just a belief, you know? So yeah, I think I'd like to leave the audience with this thought, like, what if they could really resume all physical activity since their body is fine, since symptoms are just TMS and neuroplastic?
And to add to what Miriam just said there, I think the true opportunity for folks who have this chronic pain is not just to get back to your favorite physical activities, but to even push the boundary of what you think you're capable of. Like, to that last point, I always believed that I was not a runner. Even when I made my full recovery from back pain, it's like, I am not a runner. Realized that I was noceboing myself. And so last year, actually, after we recorded our last podcast, Eddie, I ran a marathon without training, just to see if I could. That to me represented the possibility of, or what is possible, the idea that our bodies are Herculean. And there's an incredible opportunity of having been in chronic pain to transform it and leave yourself stronger than you ever thought you were.
Thank you both for being here. Painfreecomeback.com. I'll put a link in the show notes as well to be able to find it. But hit them up if you have any questions. You said the email was hello@painfreecomeback.com?
Yes.
Awesome.
hello@painfreecomeback.com. And we'll reach out to anybody who has questions.
Miriam and Alec, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Eddie.